Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A new report out on Amazon regarding the injuries workers encounter on the job. In three words, it's not pretty. The miners' strike in Alabama, still raging, no end in sight. And today on the show, the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro on Zantac and Roundup. And later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown joins us. Welcome to the Thursday, June 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And remember this, when you get an opportunity, just take a minute to do this. Sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. Entering our second year of podcasting in America. We appreciate all our sponsors helping make that happen. And one of them is Kelly and Ferraro. Brian Kelly will be joining us in about 10, 15 minutes. He joined the firm almost 20 years ago, 2002. His main practice includes litigation and workers' comp with families suffering from asbestos-related diseases. He's also involved in class action pharmaceutical claims, nursing home negligence, car accidents. Well, there's two cases that Kelly and Ferraro have been involved with in the past couple of years, and we talked about both of them. Number one is Zantac. The Food and Drug Administration reports, and they reported this several years back, that some acid-reducing and heartburn medications contain an impurity that's causing cancer. The medication is known as ranitidine, sold over the counter and by prescription as Zantac. And according to the FDA, Zantac contains 26,000 times more of that impurity than allowed by the FDA. How that happened is beyond me. And this is a drug that's been on the market since the early 1980s. The cancers we're talking about, bladder, breast, colorectal, intestinal, esophageal, stomach cancer, kidney cancer, liver, lung, pancreatic, and prostate. So, Brian is going to give us an update on where the case stands. They've got a number of lawyers working on this, and there's several law firms in the country. Toll-free number, by the way, if you are experiencing any problems with cancers that I just mentioned. 1-800-398-1795, 800-398-1795. We're also going to get into the Roundup case. That's the weed killer. And about a year ago, there was a settlement of around $10 billion. And in the past month, there was more added to that. And Brian is going to bring us up to speed on that. Now, this is a weed killer, very popular. You may have used it. I know I have used it. It's very effective. And apparently there's a landscaper, and this is what the case was all about in California, who used it pretty much all of his life. And it was a higher concentration than what is used residentially. And he developed all forms of cancer, and that was the center of the lawsuit. So Brian is going to unwind that one for us as well. Senator Sherrod Brown, as I indicated, will be joining us later in the show. And he's been doing a tour of Ohio. Very intensive one. Yesterday, he visited Toledo and Lima, pushing for Congress to pass the American Jobs Plan. That's the infrastructure bill. And make much-needed investments to improve Ohio's clean drinking water infrastructure. And I believe today he's going to join school officials and other partners at Federal Hocking Middle School's Farm to School program, celebrating the program and discussing his efforts to support local agriculture and address child hunger, which is a huge issue. He also met this week with the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, meeting with volunteers, staff, and the National Guard, who have been instrumental in the day-to-day operations of the food bank. And boy, I tell you, they've been busy, busy, busy over the year. Last week, for the first time ever, and this is the benefit of having somebody like Sherrod Brown on the Senate Banking Committee. He's the committee's chairman, too. It's even better. But last week, for the first time, the CEOs of the six biggest banks testified before that committee. And as chairman, Sherrod said it's his job to hold Wall Street executives accountable for perpetuating the system that rakes in profits at the expense of workers. And he asked the CEOs real simple questions. At a time when small businesses and families are desperate for loans, why are the big banks spending billions on stock buybacks instead of lending and putting money back into the economy? The CEO to medium worker pay ratio used to be 20 to 1. Used to be 20 to 1. Why are they now accepting executive salaries 800 to 900 times more than their lowest paid workers? Go figure that one out. Well, they were squirming in their seats, no doubt about that, because they didn't have somebody like Sherrod Brown asking these questions. So I love having him on the show. He'll be joining us later in the broadcast and the podcast right here on America's Workforce. Well, you're ready for this. A new report released Tuesday, 2 days ago, by the Strategic Organizing Center, which is a Democratic coalition of four unions, service employees, the Teamsters, the CWA, and the farm workers. This coalition revealed that Amazon warehouse workers are injured at nearly double the rate of laborers in other warehouses. According to the study, from 2017 to 2020, there were 5.9 serious injuries, defined as those that force an employee to miss work. That's how they define serious. 5.9 for every 100 Amazon warehouse workers, which is 80% higher than the injury rate at non-Amazon warehouses. For the year 2020, pandemic year, Amazon's injury rate rose to 6.5 per 100 workers, which is more than twice that of Walmart in the same year. Eric Fruman is the health and safety director of that Strategic Organizing Center, and he declared that the injury rate reflected a stunning degree of incompetence. Union reps have attributed the high rate of injuries to the demanding efficiency targets and intense productivity pressures imposed on the more than 1 million workers toiling in Amazon's fulfillment centers. The report was published on the same day that leaked pamphlets showing Amazon referring to its laborers as, quote, industrial athletes, and imploring them to prepare their bodies to be able to perform their best work by taking such steps as monitoring their urine color and buying shoes that allow for plenty of room for when their feet swell during work, because in those warehouses, they have to walk up to 13 miles a day. Holy smoke. I can't believe I'm reading this. Amazon, dubbed by some the harbinger of a dystopic neo-feudalism, has a well-documented history of worker abuse, according to the report. And CEO Jeff Bezos recently admitted in his final letter to shareholders, he's stepping down. He's still involved in the company. But he admitted that the company has to do a better job for its employees. Yeah! Unbelievable. All right, let's go to Alabama. More than 1,000 coal miners, all represented by the United Mine Workers of America, continue their strike in Brookwood, Alabama, against Warrior Met Coal. We did a show on this a couple weeks ago with Phil Smith, who's their communications director. If you go to awfradio.com, that show is archived. Just Google UMWA, and it was riveting. The major coal producer owned by powerful Wall Street financial institutions that took control of the mine after Walter Energy declared bankruptcy in 2016. That's the problem. It's being run by Wall Street. People that don't even know how to run a coal mine. All they care about is making money. The workers launched a strike in April as many of them struggled to afford basic necessities while working more than 70 hours a week. 70 hours a week. The Warrior has reaped millions of dollars in profits, even setting record highs since the takeover. Riley Hewitt is a coal miner who worked in the mine for 13 years. He said the striking workers only want a fair wage and good insurance for our families, but while they make hundreds of millions of dollars, they should show some respect for the men and women that brought this company from bankruptcy to become a thriving company. The strike, which has galvanized a surge of support across the region, is the latest episode in a growing wave of labor activity in the South, which has been hostile to unions over the years. So that is clearly one to watch. And I want to take you to the mine workers website, umwa.org. I mentioned this on the show last week. The Union International contributed $50,000 to the fund. I wish it was $500,000, but they contributed $50,000. More is going to be coming. And if you can help out in any way, help these miners out. I mean, they're busting their, you know what, 70 hours a week. And this company is just, they're slave drivers. Here's the address. It's UMWA 2021 Strike Fund, P.O. Box 513. And that's located in Dumfries, Virginia, 22026. 22026. And if you missed it, you didn't have time to write this down, just go to the mine workers website, umwa.org, and you can get all that information and get up to speed on the strike. And a number of unions have helped out. The Steelworkers District 9, West Virginia Teachers. We're going to have them on the show this coming Monday. The Florida, Kentucky, and Tennessee AFL-CIO and several mine worker unions, 1740 District 12, District 22, and District 12, the Miners Aid Fund, all trying to help the miners down in Alabama. All right, we're coming up to a break time. When we come back, we are going to fill you in on the Zantac and the Roundup cases by the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. In fact, we had Dave Meganhart, who heads that agency, on the show yesterday. And they're celebrating 50 years. You can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Before we get to Brian Kelly on behalf of Kelly and Ferraro, I have to mention to you, and I saw this story courtesy of On Labor. This is an organization out of the Harvard Law School, and they monitor what's going on in the workforce around the country. And they have found out that a number of Republican-controlled legislatures in the country are pursuing legislation that would make it much more difficult for ballot initiatives to pass. Though ballot initiatives have been used to advance causes across the political spectrum, they notably led to progressive victories. And that's what they don't like increasing the minimum wage and expanding Medicaid, even in deep red states. Well, check this out. The New York Times found that 144 bills to restrict ballot initiatives were introduced across 32 states, with 19 signed into law in 9 of those states. For example, a new law in South Dakota mandates both a 14-point font minimum on ballot initiative petitions and that everything, including the signatures, fits on a single piece of paper. You know what that means? It means the organizers will have to carry a petition the size of a beach towel. I just can't believe what's going on in America. I know they got these voter suppression drives, but this one is absolutely ridiculous. Can you imagine somebody coming to your door with a beach towel size petition wanting your name? Because that's what is being mandated. All right, let's go to line number one. And welcome back to the show. He's been on several times, and this is a segment we do each and every month. It's always on the first Thursday of the new month. And Brian Kelly is joining us on behalf of Kelly and Ferraro, the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro. Kelly-Ferraro.com. Two L's in Kelly, two R's in Ferraro. Brian Kelly, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Flash. Welcome to you back.
Ready for that beach towel petition? You never know when they come knocking at your door.
You know what? It's crazy. Every time one side thinks they got something, they dot all their I's and cross all their T's, then they change the rules on them. And that's unfortunately what happens, you know, more often than not. You know, these legislators are supposed to be the voice of the people, and when the people stand up to speak up, they sometimes, you know, silence them with different random loopholes and laws, which is crazy.
Yeah, boy, talk about jumping through hoops on that one. Wow, that's mm-hmm. really scary. Okay, we're here today to talk about some updates, and the big case is Zantac. It's been pulled off the market for us several years now because of a certain additive that's linked to cancer, and there's a number of cancers. Why don't you just fill us in? Because I know you've been working really hard on this. Where do we stand right now? And in part of your answer, I guess you need to refresh us on why this is actually happening. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's great. I can give you the quick elevator recap of kind of the science behind it, but essentially there was a chemical that was in Zantac that was there for years that was linked to several different cancers, and no one really thought anything of it because everybody had a bottle of Zantac. So, you know, how could something that's been sold and made billions of dollars and been sold for three decades cause cancer? Well, eventually, you know, as scientists progressed, they started kind of finding more and more links, and now they've linked it to about seven or eight different cancers, and sometimes it's not even cancers that you would expect. For example, I'm sure you would, you know, Zantac is for heartburn and for some stomach issues. So you would expect the GI, the stomach, the colon, things like that. But also prostate cancer has been linked to it. Breast cancer has been linked to it. So, you know, just because you think of, hey, I never had, you know, stomach issues. I may have taken Zantac because I had stomach issues, but I developed prostate cancer, which is the number one cancer in men. how could that be related to Zantac? Well, it turns out lots of scientists and ourselves believe that. So it got pulled off the shelves over a year ago. Some stores quicker than others. I think CVS and maybe Walmart were one of the first two to do it independently. And then the FDA came down and said, you know what, no, this has to be off all shelves. So when they do that, you know it's serious. The litigation's been going on for well over a year, like I said. But that doesn't mean it's too late to sign up. I took calls yesterday from several different people. And the nice thing about it is, you know, just because you call in yesterday, you're in the same exact position as somebody who would have started about a year and a half ago. And the reason being is they've switched this into what we call a multi-district litigation. So think of it similar as like a class action where, you know, if your car, if a headlight goes out, you get that letter in the mail and says you're entitled to, you know, $14 and a free repair. But in this case, it's a little different because some people, unfortunately, might develop cancer at, you know, 40 years old, or somebody might develop cancer at 85. So, you know, it all plays itself a little differently. And then what they also do is instead of one case being in Ohio and one case in New York and you have different rulings, they put all of these in one court in Miami, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's similar to the opioid cases that Cleveland was that was centered here in Cleveland.
Right, right. Okay, so we're in the middle of this whole thing, and the drug is pulled off the market. And the toll-free number, by the way, and maybe you can explain how that works. If people are encountering any of the cancers, you mentioned a few. Let me run down that list again. Bladder, breast, colorectal, intestinal, esophageal, stomach, kidney, liver, lung, pancreatic, prostate. So if you are encountering any of those and you took Zantac for a number of years, you should be calling that toll-free number? Is that the case, Brian?
That's correct. And in fact, it doesn't even need to be a number of years. That's what's actually going on right now is there's still studies being determined if, you know, what the dosage needs to be. I liken it to smoking. You know, some people can smoke their entire life, and my great-grandmother lived till her mid-90s and had cigarettes almost every day. And then there's other people, unfortunately, it never developed cancer. And then there's other people, unfortunately, who had a much smaller dosage and, you know, maybe only smoked for in their 20s or 30s, and then they get lung cancer. So that's some of the science we're still trying to determine. At Kelly and Ferraro, all of our work is done on a contingency basis, so we don't get paid unless you get paid. So to call us up and ask us questions, that's all free. And we can explain everything to you and go through a history. And, you know, if you have a loved one who's passed away as well, you know, we can talk to you and work on that and see if that's something that might be interested. Even if they passed away 5, 10, 15 years ago, because, you know, the science is just coming out now about it. So don't think that if your husband or wife passed away, you know, that long ago, or your father passed away, that it's I'm too late, because you're not.
So there's no, like, statute of limitations. You mentioned 10 years. Does it go beyond that as well? Because this drug has been on the market since the 80s.
That's right. And as of right now, there's no statute of limitations. But that's going to end shortly, but that could end by the winter. The statute of limitations in this case is when you had the knowledge that this drug may have caused or could be potentially causing a cancer. And so that knowledge is argued of... Of course, defense attorneys are going to argue is the first study came out and that nobody read in some science magazine, and the statute should be, you know, run. And we'll argue that it runs all the way until the FDA said, hey, you got to pull this off the shelves. And then you get 1 or 2 years, depending on which state you're in. So here in Ohio, we're still within that time frame to file a claim. So you don't want to, I'm not telling you to sit on this forever, because that's not the case. But as of right now, you're still eligible.
Brian, how big is this right now? And I don't know. You mentioned this is being all handled in Miami, so a number of states other than Ohio. I know you're based in Cleveland, Ohio, but you practice nationwide. Any idea how many states, how many people? Where are we with that right now, Brian?
I can only estimate that it's all 50 states. I do know as of our last conference call, which was about 6 weeks ago, we just crossed the 100,000 clients claim, not 100,000 clients at Kelly and Ferraro, like nationwide. So it's
right.
It's pretty large, and it's growing at a steady pace. It's not like everybody signed up immediately. Like I said, I'm still taking calls on a daily basis and from people all across the country.
Here's what's baffling about this whole case. This is an additive to Zantac, and it's a cancer-causing impurity. It's called, the brief name is NDMA. I don't even want to try to pronounce it. It's got almost every letter in the alphabet. And what I'm reading from your website, kelly-ferraro.com, the chemical that they put into Zantac was originally developed to aid in the production of rocket fuel. Brian, is there any explanation why the makers of Zantac would put a chemical that's linked to the production of rocket fuel into this drug? Do we have any answers on that yet?
No, and that's actually what's going on right now. So we're in what we call the discovery phase, where we get to, and I'm talking all plaintiffs' attorneys who are kind of working together with, you know, across the country, get to look through all their records, get to talk to their doctors, and get to figure out, yeah, we see that. I want to talk to Dr. X and say, please explain this to me of why you're doing it. You know, sometimes they put these chemicals in as preservatives, or they put it in because it might, you know, speed up the process. So I can't tell you why they did it. I'm sure they had a reason, and I'm sure their reason was profit-based, would be my guess, you know, to maybe make their pill a little better than than a Rolaid that you would take instead, and did not care about the consequences. That's taken hundreds of attorneys across the country to go through these millions and maybe even billions of paperwork that they you know, Zantac and some of the other distributors, and because it's not only Zantac's hands who are dirty in this. They're the name brand, but there's other chemical producers and other distributors who kind of knew something wasn't right, and you know, turn their a blind eye to it because it's flying off the shelves.
You know, that's my next question, because this drug went generic. The name is ranitidine, and I saw it. It was very popular. In fact, frankly, I've used it many, many times. Mm-hmm. I used it gingerly. Maybe that's why I'm okay right now. I don't know. But what about the makers of the generics? Are they part of this lawsuit as well, or is it just the parent company here? I don't know how you pronounce that or how you say that. Zantac, yeah. The main company here.
The generics are at this point still involved in the case. They are attempting to file a motion to dismiss. That's been going back and forth and been argued, stating that, you know, once they hit, not to get too deep in the woods, but once they hit a generic level of a pill, they can't be held accountable. We, you know, obviously beg to differ. So if you even only took ranitidine at this point, you can still give me a call or give our firm a call, because there's a lot of our clients who do that, because let's be honest, if you see them, you see the two next to each other on the shelf and it, you know, it does the same exact thing. I don't blame anybody. And I do the same thing. I got three kids. I pick the one that's $7 cheaper sometimes, right, and bring it home. So, but if you had the same damages as the guy who could afford the more expensive one, we don't believe that, you know, your claim shouldn't be allowed. So if you even took just the generic as of right now, that's okay.
And according to the FDA, Zantac contains 26,000 times more of that impurity I was talking about, NDMA, that's linked to a cancer, 26,000 times more than what the FDA allows. Here's what's baffling about this. How did this drug even passed the first test back in the 1980s? Is this something, it seems like that should be investigated right now. How can they let this drug be on the market if it had that much of an impurity in it? Is the FDA in trouble for letting that happen?
No, at this point, no. There are, you know, the government kind of has their own different defenses that private companies don't. And, you know, that's another thing that's being argued is, did Zantac change the formula at any time? Was this the testing in 1980 not as strong as the testing is in 2002? I mean, I'm doing this on my cell phone right now, this interview. And remember in 1980, if you even had a computer, how big and slow it would be. So, you know, maybe the science was behind the times when it went through. Again, that's everything that we're trying to figure out now. And to go through the amount of paperwork, and even though we try our best to, you know, ask such specific questions, we'll get records that have almost nothing to do. You know, we'll get call log records from 1994 of who called, you know, the headquarters that day. That has nothing to do with what we're looking for, but you got to go through that stuff. So I would hopefully, that's normally how these big mass tort cases go. They take, unfortunately, multiple years to go through just because there's so much information. And you hope by the end of it, you have all the answers and you can figure it out. But it's there's a lot of kind of things when you get into it that, like you said, the rocket fuel, 25,000 times more. The fact that it's a drug that's known to have cancer and no one really did anything about it for multiple years. It's all kind of astounding when you think about it. And so you just hope it's not happening more often and we're just learning about it with a couple different, you know, known products.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to unwind, and that's why we have people like you, Brian Kelly. Very good. Toll-free number, 1-800-398-1795. 1-800-398-1795. You go to the website, too, kelly-ferraro.com. You can get all the information you need and then some on the Zantac case. And there's other things we want to talk about on the show. I have to take a break. We're going to get an update on Roundup, and the courts are starting to reopen. Brian's going to talk about that. That's a really important thing. And he's going to explain what that means, especially if you have a pending case and you want to file something. Later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us, and it's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Brian Kelly, one of the many fine attorneys, I might add, at Kelly and Ferraro, proud sponsors of this show we call America's Workforce. Toll-free number, once again, 800-398-1795. We talked plenty about the Zantac case. Can you give us an update on Roundup? And also, I noticed the courts are starting to reopen. Maybe we should start right there. And explain what that means to people that may want to file a case, that have a case, because, you know, you're probably zoomed out right now, Brian, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, a lot of courts are slowly reopening and cases are starting to be tried again. It's important to note that if something did happen to you over, you know, we'll call it the shutdown, and you did want to file, but you didn't feel comfortable or you didn't know how to do it, to go out there and call an attorney immediately, because while they did put, as you and I talked in the first one, about statute of limitations, while some counties, and it kind of varied county by county or state, by, you know, allowed some extra time or put, you know, some more window, that's closing. So you want to be very careful that you didn't think, well, courts are still shut down. How can I file a claim? it's a common misconception. You know, attorneys are still working. You call them, they'll take care of everything for you. The only one positive that may have come out of COVID as far as the legal system goes is we have been able to Zoom. And so instead of a judge only being able to hear 10 hearings a day because of the formalities of everything and everyone driving out there, now they're churning out 15 or 20. So cases are, even though there's a backlog, it's moving quickly to catch everything back up. So it's important that, you know, you get out there and you don't lose out, because they are pretty strict with the statute of limitations. And once if you miss a news day or if you miss the article that says, hey, we're back doing things the old way, the court system, unfortunately, says you should have known. So call an attorney, file your case, do what you need to do. And you don't want to miss out on it.
Yeah, it's one thing about the courts. They're not going to reach out to you and tell you how they work.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. You have to know. And if you miss these deadlines, you can refile. But guess what? That's going to cost you more money. That's basically how it works.
Sorry to cut you off there, Flash. Some of these deadlines are hard, rules. So you can refile. It'll cost you more money. But they're going to say, thanks for the filing fee. Your case is dismissed. And they don't tell you that before you file either. And there's no refund on it.
Oh, boy.
So you got to make sure of it.
All right. Give me an update here on Roundup. I saw a story recently, and I guess they paid out some money. They created a fund about a year ago, and I saw something online about $10 billion. But maybe you can refresh us. This is Roundup, the weed killer. What's going on in that arena, Brian?
Right. There was a tentative settlement, and they had it anywhere between $9 and $11 billion, because obviously there's going to be some future claims of people who haven't developed cancer yet. And that's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's a very specific type of cancer. So that's the one the scientists linked it to. So if you've been diagnosed with that in the last 2 years, you can still file a claim. Unfortunately, if you were diagnosed 3, 4, 5 years ago, you may have missed your window. But they are starting to pay out, and I know $10 billion sounds like a lot, but there was, I think, almost 200,000 people who filed claims in that case. So there is significant money out there for a claim, and they are starting to get paid, but it's not a guarantee. But if you have been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, like I said, in the last year or two, give us a call. And you don't have to necessarily be a landscaper. Or, a janitor who is spraying this stuff all the time. If you just had the bottle in your backyard and you used one bottle a summer, the science has said that that's enough to cause it.
Really? I didn't know that. I know the landscaper case that was out of California. He was using it almost every day out there, and obviously because the weather's different than what it would be in a state like Ohio. But even casual use of using Roundup around your yard, that can cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma then?
That's what the science, or some science has said, and Roundup has been willing to accept that. Now, don't get me wrong, like we talked about before, with this isn't a direct class action, it's again a multi-district litigation, so maybe the person who only used it in the summers might not be compensated the same as somebody who, was exposed to it on a daily basis, but they're still being compensated.
Gotcha. All right. So, again, if anybody has any questions, just call Kelly and Ferraro, 800-398-1795, 398-1795. That's toll-free anywhere in America. Brian, we got a couple of minutes left, and I know you also deal with asbestos-related diseases, and I know that's a big part of what Kelly and Ferraro does. Any updates in that arena right now? Anything that you want to call attention to our listeners? Because we have a lot. Especially this show is sponsored by a number of the trades, the building trades in Ohio and elsewhere. We talk to them on a regular basis, and I know they were exposed over the years. So is there anything you can add to that?
Yeah, just as always, people think asbestos was all torn out in the 70s and 80s, and it wasn't. And it's a disease that we talked about before that it lingers. It's not something that you are around asbestos one day and then you have a disease the next. It could be 10, 30, 40 years. There is a bill, I believe, in the budget bill that's going on that may change the statute of limitations on when to file a death claim for a loved one. Right now in Ohio, it's 2 years. If one of your loved ones passed away from asbestos-related disease. There's talks of moving that to 1 year. Obviously, that's far down the line, and we'll see if that even makes it into the bill. But my point being with that is, give us a call. You know, don't wait on it. You know, if you're there's unfortunately, I can't tell you how many people I have to turn away because they call me and they said it's been it's been 4 or 5 years, and I say I'm sorry. I know your husband was probably he worked at LTV Steel, he worked at GM, and they might tell me, hey, you know, GM gave us a good living, we didn't want to sue them, and you're not necessarily suing GM. You're suing the companies that put the products in, and I'm using GM just as an example, any steel or auto. So it's not necessarily them. You know, that plant may not have known they were exposing you to asbestos or, you know, a level to asbestos. And so you're going after the John Mansvilles, the Owen Cornings, who had information from the 40s and 50s and didn't tell anybody, including the owners of the place you used to work for.
Sure. Yeah, just like the tobacco companies. Hey, you don't have to worry about cancer and cigarettes. Don't worry about that.
Right.
Oh, that study, by the way, that study doesn't mean anything.
and I know a lot of our employees, you know, they were good workers for 35 years, and they say, my employer, you know, put my kids through college. I don't want to get them in trouble. Again, I'm just stressing, you're not necessarily doing that. You're going after these bankruptcy trusts that had the knowledge that may not have told your employer about it. So don't feel like you're turning your back on the union or you're turning your back on, you know, your employer. You're not doing that. We represent 40,000 clients, so you're not alone in this.
Good point. All right, Brian, thanks for all the updates. I appreciate what you do and all the other fine attorneys that work at Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. A lot of good stuff on the website. There's videos there and that toll-free number again, 800-398-1795. I'm going to let you get back to work, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you down the road because there's so many issues that are very important to our listeners, and we want to make sure we get that information out to them. So you take care. Stay safe, my brother. All right?
All right. Thank you very much, Flash.
All right. Quick break here. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Iron Workers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more online at oft.aft.org. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars. Always enjoy talking to this guy because he is on the right side of the fence. Senator Sherrod Brown joining us. He's been doing a whirlwind tour of the state of Ohio, trying to get a feel, getting a pulse of what's going on in various communities like Toledo and Lima and the American Jobs Plan. We'll get to that. But Senator, First, welcome back to the show, and I got to hand it to you. I read the story, I guess it was last week or the week before, that you are now the committee chairman for the Senate Banking and Housing Committee, and that gave you an opportunity to grill some very, very powerful Wall Street executives. And we're talking about the big bank, the big bank CEOs. Talk to me about this, Senator.
Sure. Never had a hearing like this before. And so I became, this committee is called, the people around Washington call it the Banking Committee, but it's really the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee. And it's always been way too much about Wall Street and not enough about housing and not much about workers at all. So those days are behind us. I brought in the CEOs of the six largest banks. One of them, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, who makes $32 million a year. He makes literally 900 times what his starting workers make, starting low-wage workers. And I said, I don't think you, Mr. Diamond, I don't think you think you work 900 times harder than they. What? Explain this. And of course he didn't. But these are the most powerful people. They have too much power in Washington. They have too much power in our economy. They're a big part of the reason that profits are up, executive compensation is through the roof, and workers' wages have been flat. And we want to grill them and make them change their behavior over time.
So are you going to do this on a regular basis to keep them in line? What's the game plan here?
Well, keep them in line. It's probably an exaggeration from what we can do, but their banks are trillion-dollar banks, but we call this the first annual something. I forget the exact title, but we use the word annual. We're going to bring them in every year. This time it was remote, so we had to do it, they were in their offices on a screen, each of them. But next time it'll be in person, and we expect them to come back once a year. Maxine Waters, my friend in the House, who's the chair of the House Banking Committee, the Financial Affairs Committee, is brought them in the next day, and we're going to start doing it every year because they've got to start answering to the public. Every time there's problems, they get help. Workers don't. They continue their compensation, as I said, is through the roof, and they do some things for the country. They're better than they were, but they're not nearly what happened in Cleveland, the foreclosures. We know all of that is partly at the feet of the banking industry and the big guys.
900 times more than their lowest paid workers. That's ridiculous. And Senator, there was a time in America when that ratio was like 20 to 1, right?
That's right. I grew up in Mansfield, as I said on the show, and there's like a Mansfield Tire and a Westinghouse, and apparently the head of those companies made 15, 20, 25 times what the average worker at that company made. The average worker could make a living wage and had a decent, close to middle-class lifestyle, carried a union card, and the CEOs and the presidents of the branch bank or the plants like in Mansfield, probably made 10 or 15 times, and the CEO in Pittsburgh or Washington or New York or whatever maybe made 25 or 30 times, but not hundreds of times more like they do now.
All right, Senator, let's talk about what you're doing in the state of Ohio, and I understand you visited Toledo and Lima, Ohio, to push for Congress to pass the American Jobs Plan, and we're talking infrastructure here, and in this case, we're looking at clean drinking water. We don't want another Flint, Michigan to happen in this country, or any part in the country. I'm just wondering, what kind of reception are you getting? I know the Republicans seem to be adding a little bit more. They're still far apart with what Biden wants to do, but what are you hearing right now?
Well, I'm hearing from the public that they don't care. They don't think that Mitch McConnell, or for that matter, me, any of us, we don't decide what's partisan. The voters decide what they want, and the voters want us to go big. And big means major infrastructure, highways, bridges, water, sewer, good jobs in the trades, good well-paying jobs, keep people working for years on building infrastructure. But it also means broadband. It means housing. It means childcare. One of the reasons a whole lot of people aren't back at work is because of childcare. It's not because they're getting fat and happy on unemployment, as right-wingers say, as Republican leadership has said, that they don't want to come back and work because they're getting this big unemployment check of $300 a week. People aren't going back to work in part because they still don't feel safe in some cases, and especially because so many people can't get childcare now. So I went to a child care center in Columbus yesterday. My daughter's a councilwoman in the city, and she'd been working with the Southside Education Center, Early Learning Center, for some time, and I went there, and they're doing really phenomenal stuff, but we don't fund child care well enough, and so people can't balance three things at once. They're taking care of their families, they're doing child care, they're running their house, they're in a paid job that doesn't pay enough, and they're stretched, and government's got to be on their side for a change.
So what do you think? Biden wants to get this done ASAP. In fact, when he first introduced it, he'd like to get something by the 4th of July, which is like a month away. I'm wondering here, I mean, the talk's going on. The Republicans, as I indicated, I think they're close to $1 trillion. Do you think that there's going to be some settlement here? What do you
feel? Well, the Republicans are saying $1 trillion now, which is about half of what it should be, frankly, what we really, really need to do infrastructure. But what they're not reporting as much is they want to get that $1 trillion by cutting other programs like the earned child tax credit, earned income tax credit, things that a lot of 92% of Ohio kids are getting the child tax credit now starting in July. They want to take money from that and put it in infrastructure. We want to reinstate some of the big tax cuts, some of the big tax cuts that rich people got. You remember 4 years ago in this show, we talked about Trump and the Republicans wanted to do a big $1 trillion infrastructure plan. And then, oops, they changed their mind and they did a huge tax cut for corporate interests, right, and for the wealthy. And so literally 70% of that tax cut went to the richest 1%, not the richest 10, the richest one. So we want to just claw back some of that tax cut, use that to fund this, and Republicans won't say yes to anything that's going to increase taxes on the rich. The rich who have mostly done very, very well during this pandemic. So they aren't going big enough, number one, overall, when what we do with infrastructure, not enough investment. But second, where they want to pay for it makes no sense to me, and it's not good for the country. So that's why we're far apart. So I still hope they cooperate and we do this bipartisanly, but what I want is to deliver and do it big and do what the voters voted for last November, and that is change, and that's infrastructure and investment in families and highways and bridges and broadband and all the things this country's not been doing so well on in the last 25 years.
Senator, one more question here before you go. You're familiar with the For the People Act, which would definitely revolutionize voting. And you know what's going on in various states. I mean, almost like 45 states now passing voter suppression laws. And Ohio is in the mix on that one as well. Does this scare you, what's going on in America? Because it seems like this is an assault on democracy.
Yeah, it used to be when a party would lose an election, they'd figure, well, what did we do wrong? We got to know how to talk to workers better. We got to know how to talk to African-Americans better. We need to know how to work with business better. Whatever it is, we got to change our policies and our message to win elections. What Republicans did after they lost the House, the Senate, and the White House is they want to change the rules. They really want politicians, instead of the voters choosing the politicians, they want the politicians to choose which voters vote. In Ohio, I mean, I, as you know, many years ago, I ran the Ohio election system. We have not, for 50 years, for my whole life, we have never had problems with an honest, fair election system. But Republicans are acting like they got to go back and change everything and restrict the right to vote. They clearly, this is an attack on democracy, and they know it, and they should be ashamed of themselves. That's why we have to pass this national standard for voting to make sure that everybody has an opportunity, regardless of background or income, that the CEOs I interviewed, they should be allowed to vote, that committee, and the rest, everybody else should be allowed to vote. It should be equal. Every vote should count equally.
Exactly. Senator, I'm going to let you go. I always appreciate you coming to the table here on America's Workforce and the voice of workers in America, and you just keep up the fight. You're, like I said, you're on the right side of the fence. Just keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Keep doing it. Thanks, buddy. All right. See you, everybody.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. find out more information online at labortools.com.